Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's that love that's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. And broadcast school has really paid off.
Indeed it has. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome back. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul, and it has been too long since I've heard that driving bass line for our theme song opener. But feels good to be back. Feels good to be back in baseball, and Happy New Year belatedly, because we celebrate Happy New Year for opening day and opening weekend. I was in New York City with the San Francisco Giants. I got to go see the Giants play the Yankees at Yankee Stadium this year, and that was a lot of fun.
Really?
And the game that I went to, of course, could have ended better, but it was a lot of fun to be there.
Did you go to that shutout game? The Giants got shut out? Were you at that one?
Yeah, I did. The one on Sunday, it wasn't fun. But the ball that Giancarlo Stanton hit was definitely one of the most impressive home runs that I have ever seen, and I've seen a few impressive home runs hit.
Yeah, you grew up with Barry Bonds, so I'm sure you've seen a few.
Yes.
Which ties into our trivia question later. Now, new year, new season, new show-ish, new everything. I wanted to gauge opinions here, because some people expressed interest in giving the trivia question at the top of the show and then answering it at the end rather than week to week or after. I don't know. What do you think? Should we do it now, or should we just do it traditional? Keep it the way it's always been.
Oh, well, that's an interesting thought. I certainly don't mind doing it that way, but then of course it definitely ends any sort of possibility that someone might win a West Coast Bias t-shirt or something like that. I don't know that we've had too many of the winners or not. So I think maybe this episode we'll keep it like we have, and we will review it, and maybe our next episode we will do it that way.
Nice. All right. Yeah. Remember to email us baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Now, was that your first time at the new Yankee Stadium? It's not new anymore, but
it's new as in relative to the history of baseball in New York. Yes, that was my first trip to the new Yankee Stadium. It was also my first trip to any Yankee Stadium, and my first trip to New York since I was six.
Wow.
So in many ways, it was my first trip to New York. It was short. It was action-packed, and it was good. I'm ready to go see more of that city.
Did you go over to Cooperstown while you were in the state?
I did not get out of the city into upstate. That will have to be another trip.
That's not good. All right. Well, hey.
For me, any excuse to travel is fine. If it's going to travel for baseball, all the better.
You're out of here!
Nice. Yeah. I think I'm going to go to Toronto this year. I've never been. I'm going to go check out the Blue Jays, American League East. This is West Coast Bias, yet we're out traveling on the East Coast to go to these games, but we shall see. A lot of baseball has been going on. A lot of records.
A lot of records in this early season. We are 3 weeks into this baseball season. Many of the teams are currently playing their 22nd game of the year, we've had a lot happening. Clayton, your boy Clayton.
Oh,
he was one of them.
Oh my god! I mean, Clayton over here just getting Got his 200th win as we speak right now. He's in line for his 201st, but we shall see. But I mean, it's just, you know, he's just doing it all. He's just doing it all. And he's doing it all with one team, which nowadays is extremely rare.
It is.
In fact, it's so rare that there's only one other person with 200 wins and 3 Cy Young awards that all played for one team. That would be Jim Palmer. Maybe I should have saved that for the trivia question.
That would have been a good trivia question. Good one.
Kershaw's now in the elite era of Walter Johnson and Bob Gibson. He's the only pitcher with 200 wins and 2,800 plus strikeouts, all for one team. And it's just Kershaw and Pedro at that 200 win mark with 150 plus ERA. It's just unbelievable. Wow. I mean, 150 ERA plus. I said that backwards.
I was going to say 150 ERA.
Yeah. Not great. That's more Madison Bumgarner territory. Not ideal.
Oh, poor Mason Saunders. He had a good run, but it looks like it's over.
He is
a left-hander. Who knows? Maybe he'll come back and do a Danny Darwin thing.
Donnie Darko? Oh, Danny Darwin. Sorry.
One of those crafty left-handers that just, you know, last in the
league. You know, I was thinking
he could be an inning at a time.
A Jamie Moyer. You know, he could be that guy that pitches 22 seasons. Why not? He's like Kershaw, and I'm going to knock on some wood over here. They've never been really sidelined for any whole season. They've never had Tommy John. You know, they're both, I mean, obviously one is a first round unanimous Hall of Famer, and the other one is arguably the greatest postseason pitcher of all time. But in terms of a career, having 3 rings is, you know, I'm sure he's very happy. The only other pitchers in baseball history to reach 200 wins before they've gotten 100 losses: Lefty Grove, Pedro Martinez, and Whitey Ford. But Clayton Kershaw has now the highest winning percentage of any pitcher with 200 career victories, baseball history, 288 losses. And as we said, he's in line to get the win today. Hopefully I didn't just jinx that, but we shall see. Do you know who the current active win leader is in baseball right now?
The current active win leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I don't know that off the top of my head, no.
Well, he's not currently playing because he's on my fantasy team, and it's really upsetting me. Justin Verlander, 244.
Justin Verlander. Okay, that's not too surprising.
Got Greinke up there with 223. Scherzer with 203.
Okay.
And now Scherzer obviously ain't going to be playing for like 6 or 7 more days, as he got a 10-game suspension, which he is not appealing, due to, well...
A horse excrement.
Too much, like... So, what is he being suspended for? What is he being suspended for?
Well,
for foreign substance?
The real question is, how sticky is too sticky?
How sticky is too sticky?
I think it depends on the context, of course. But if we're talking about baseball, that is not defined. He was, I guess, checked, as is the new procedure coming off the mound in the 3rd inning. He was told that his hands are too sticky and he needed to wash them. So I guess...
And he did.
He did.
In front of a league official.
And then came back out onto the field, was re-inspected, and was told that his hand was still too sticky. To which he argued, well, all it is sweat and rosin. Sweat is a natural body function. You can't do anything about it. Rosin is there to, in theory, counteract the sweat, make it possible for the pitchers to grip the ball effectively so it doesn't slip out of their hands and go somewhere where it's not expected, like into the head of the batter.
Yeah, the orbital bone of the hapless batter who's getting 100 miles an hour coming at him. And that's actually something that Scherzer has always said. It's that he's one of his proudest achievements is that he's never hit a batter in the head. And he used to use pine tar. I mean, this is a you know, he didn't shy away from that before, you know, before it was really cracked down. It was always a rule. You were never allowed to do that. But for 100+ years, people did that. Mainly for safety. And for 100+ years, nobody knew anything about spin rate. They just figured, oh, I can grip it a little better. Oh, I can make it do a little something else. I can, you know, have more control.
I can get a little bit more curve on my curveball. I can, you know,
get a little bit
more rise in my fastball, or I can control it on the corners just a little bit better if my hands are dry and they stick to the ball a little bit so that the ball comes off my hand when I want it to, rather than when the ball feels like it.
Yeah, and if you've ever listened to a Dodgers broadcast with Oral Hershiser, he's talks about it all the time, how the batters have all the advantages. They get to use, you know, Stick'Em. They get to use Spider Tech. They use Pine Tar. They get to use whatever they want.
To hold on to the bat.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is also equally as
advantageous,
dangerous projectile.
Sure.
Should it come out of the hands unexpectedly.
But it's also an advantage that the batters have that the pitchers don't have, or at least officially don't have. And so it was always balanced out by, you know, you use a little, I use a little, okay, fine. But now, that's no longer the case. And even a legal substance, a substance that is given to the
and
players.
And has been, so, well, for as long as I've been watching baseball, and certainly much longer than that.
Right.
There has always been a bag of rosin on the mound for the pitcher to use to make sure his hand is dry. And
the official report for this punishment was that, quote, based on the umpire's training to detect rosin on a pitcher's hands, they concluded that the level of stickiness during the fourth inning check was so extreme that it was inconsistent with the use of rosin and or sweat alone. So
I think that this is a case of not listening to Trevor Bauer. I think
we talked
about it on this show when it happened. He created a video in the Dodgers dugout where he demonstrated holding a baseball with an open palm,
right,
with nothing but sweat and rosin, and the ball hung to the bottom of his palm with his fingers outstretched. It was quite an impressive display of how sticky just rosin and sweat can be. But if that is what's going on, then, you know, what's going on? What are pitchers to do if just what they have been doing their whole professional lives and the whole history of baseball, it would seem, of using rosin to dry the sweat to make their hand a little bit more tacky on the ball? They can't do that anymore.
Right.
We're going to see a lot more hit batters. We're going to see a lot more concussions with batters.
Now, I don't know if perhaps he did have a little something extra on there, or what I think has generally been perceived as being true is that he had a little rosin in his glove, which is illegal. That's patently illegal. You can't have any substance, legal or otherwise, in your glove. And so if that was the case, that might be a reason why he's not at all appealing it, because he knows he was wrong. Or he had something else, maybe a little pine tar, maybe a little something. But it's not just the rule, because there was specifically a memo distributed to all the teams last month that says, quote, that rosin, quote, used excessively or otherwise misapplied to gloves or other parts of the uniform may be determined by the umpires to be a prohibited foreign substance, the use of which may subject a player to ejection and discipline. So even though it's not technically a foreign substance because it's applied, they can treat it as such, which is strange, which is a little, again, if it's in the glove, okay, yeah, done, he's out. But if it wasn't in the glove and if his hand was just too sticky, how do you determine that? This has been the question of the week right here, right? And I don't think it's over just because he didn't appeal his suspension.
We definitely have not heard the last of it. And what I read about him not appealing the suspension was that he heard that the appeal process was just to Major League Baseball and not any sort of outside Forrest. So I figured that even if he was in the right, he wouldn't really get a fair say right. in what their ruling was. So he decided just to
take it on the chin. The Mets rotation is depleted to say the least. I think Kodai Senga is the only starting pitcher who's still on the roster that was on the original opening day roster. Dr. Meredith Wills, the baseball expert extraordinaire, literal baseball, the ball, you know?
Yeah, the
scientist.
The aerospace engineer.
Right. She had a suggestion that I saw that I think would be, well, it's better than nothing. Because, like, in terms of determining stickiness factor, right? Like, having a set... A scale. I don't even know how you would say it, but she said something very low tech, which everybody could do, is essentially maybe like everybody, you put a wiffle ball in your hand, and if it sticks to your hand's too sticky, or something like that. Something that can be replicated in every clubhouse.
Something
that they can just quickly do it, and if it falls off, you're good. If it sticks on, you're out.
And that's totally reasonable. Something that is easily defined, easily.
Repeatable,
some sort of repeatable test to have a defined level of stickiness. So everyone now has a baseline. It's like, okay, my hand can't be more than this sticky.
Right.
And in terms of having rosin in his glove, where in his glove was it? Was it like on the inside?
Yeah.
Or was it like in the pocket where the ball would...
No, I assume it's like in the heel or somewhere like that. You know, like you don't put your hand all the way in your glove, you know, like, or certainly major leaguers don't, right?
Right. So, well, there's always a little bit of a palm, but so it would be on the inside where the hand goes?
I would assume it would be in the pocket. No, I would assume it's inside. I assume it would be inside where the hand goes, thus concealing any sort of, you know, funny business. And then you can just dab on it or something. You know, who knows, man? These guys, Scherzer's a veteran, a true veteran. He's got all the tricks, you know. And I don't hold it against him.
As we go back in time to talk about pitchers hiding stuff on the inside of their glove, you know, I remember... I don't know even how many years ago at this point it was, but there was a pitcher on the cheating Astros.
Oh, the Trashtros?
Mike Scott was caught in a game.
Oh, in the 80s.
In the 80s.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
With a nail file.
Oh, yeah.
In his glove.
Oh, yeah.
During a game.
A straight up Emery board or whatever.
And to scuff up the ball. So it went, And he didn't get a suspension.
No, he was lights out.
and it was the inconsistency, the lack of clarity, the lack of transparency, and the lack of any sort of independent verification outside of the league is quite infuriating.
So Scherzer's opinion is that, with modern technology, they can and should just look at spin rates. And you have a threshold for, you know, up or down, let's say, high or low, maybe, I don't know, 70 RPMs or something, 85 RPMs, whatever. An agreeable ratio or range of... fluctuation that would be okay, and because his spin rate that entire game did not change really. I mean, you know, not any sort of significant amount. So, and that was his main point, was like, hey, look, I mean, this is just the way that I pitched. I wasn't dipping into it later on in the game.
I wasn't doing anything different than I always have.
Now, and that's an issue too, because it's kind of like steroids. It's like, well, you know. Oh, he just got popped now, but, you know, how long has he been doing it kind of thing? And is this your natural spin rate? I don't know. I mean, that seems like it could make sense, but that's, again, it's kind of a little too hard because, like, I'm sure StatCast and there's all these different kinds. I mean, I think MLB has one set of you know, ways to measure all this stuff, but it does seem like
not all of those ways are public for us fans to really be able to access and to evaluate.
So a weighted ball. It doesn't have to be a wiffle ball, but some kind of weighted ball, let's say 3 ounces. What's a baseball? 5 ounces?
Something like that.
Yeah. So let's say 4 ounces. Okay. Something like that. Because as obviously Trevor Bauer showed, you could hang a baseball upside down on the palm of your hand for at least 5 seconds with a lot of tack. So let's say 3 ounces. Let's do that, right? A ball, some sort of like, you know, little, I don't know, a racquetball or something.
Something with low friction.
Yeah.
Something that is measurable, something that is repeatable, and something that will be consistent for all 30 teams.
Yeah, because it is a bit unfair. And I think the fact that it happened to Scherzer is only going to make this not go away anytime soon.
Yeah, this is one of the best pitchers in the game right now.
Now, moving on from these new rules and looking at all the other new rules that we've seen implemented so far, what are your initial takes? We're only about 3 weeks in here. We still have a long way to go, but have you seen anything? Is there anything dramatic? Is there something that's not as dramatic as you thought it would be? What are your initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thoughts are I really don't see much of a difference in the size of the base.
That's true. They
said, oh, this is going to increase bang-bang plays. Oh, it's going to increase the amount of steals that are going to happen.
Well, it definitely has. It definitely has that. I thought you just meant in perception. In
perception, yes. But I think there's always going to be bang-bang plays in baseball.
No, but now they're not bang-bang plays. Now they're just safe. I mean, steals have gone through the roof.
Well, but is that because of the bases or is that because of the pickoff rule?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both.
And I don't think that the pickoff throws are what was slowing down the pace of play. But the most dramatic difference that I have seen in amongst all the rules is, of course, the pitch clock. And the pace of play has really increased. And I think I've liked the results of play with the pitch clock, although it is more difficult to talk about that play. Oh, wow, did you see that play? And it's like, look at this. And then we just missed the next pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a certain rhythm even in the stands. It's like,
yeah,
I want to talk to your neighbor. Oh, wow, did you see that play? What did you think of that play? And then you miss
There's not even time for replay on the broadcast. They can't even show a replay anymore.
It's really a little bit extreme and will take a bit of getting used to, but overall I think it has been good, unless your name is, you know, Juan Soto, who blames the pitch clock on why he is hitting
really
100. Yeah.
Well, I have Juan Soto in my fantasy league too, so trust me, I am I have him under a microscope. Now, I thought you were going to talk about another Padre, Yu Darvish, who took a tough luck loss last Sunday due to the new rules. You know, in a season where the pitch clock and pacing of games is garnering a lot of attention, that last Sunday, Darvish had a 12 strikeout game. He was disgusting. He was just lights out. Nobody could touch him. But in the second inning, I don't know if you were watching this game. I certainly was. He allowed a soft bunt single to third. Just a little dribbler, right? Guy made it safe. Then on the next batter, he steps off the mound because of a pitch calm glitch, which I've been seeing a little bit as well. That's a whole new thing too.
Right. Well, the pitch calm and how the pitch calm affects the pace of play and the pitch clock is a whole other can of worms that we can talk to.
But in this inning, okay, the guy on first, he steps off the mound because of a glitch, followed by a pickoff throw, which is two disengagements at that time, right? But he doesn't realize that. Then the catcher, Austin Nola, pushes the pickoff throw button, But he means to press the pitch out button, which box the runner to second, because he does, you know, because he, again, same thing,
right.
Which would never happen with hand signals, upon which he immediately steals third and then comes home on a sack fly that would be the only run of the game for either team. Darvish takes a 12K quality start. L. It's brutal.
It is. It is. It is. I admire the commitment that the umpires have shown to enforcing the pitch clock rule. However, I do think there has to be something said and forgiven for non-penalty concerning equipment malfunctions.
Right, especially when it's all new.
Whether it be a lace on a glove, a shoelace, pitchcom issue, a gust of wind throws sand up into the eyes of the pitcher. He has to like wipe his eyes and the thing. These things that are not necessarily
extenuating circumstances
within the pitcher's control,
right?
Needs to be addressed. I think more fairly, there has to be some sort of concession where either the batter or the pitcher has a legitimate equipment issue that will affect the pitch, the at-bat, to be able to correct, adjust without a pitch clock penalty. And there has to be some sort of discretion, or even something as benign as, you know, being aware of what's actually happening on the field, like in the last exhibition between the A's and the Giants, where Sergio Romo came out to tip his cap and retire as a Giant, getting a standing ovation. He was tagged with two pitch clock violations during that time because he is soaking in the moment, as were the fans,
right,
and the thing. And there's the umpire there just looking at his watch
ball
and
one,
giving him ball two because he's not allowing the moment to be a moment in an exhibition game.
Right, and we saw this when the Cubs went to L.A. and Cody Bellinger went back to L.A. for the first time.
And
he got a standing go, and then he starts his at-bat 0-1.
Yeah, there needs to be something to come on. Read the room, Blue.
Right.
It's like this. This needs to happen. This is outside of the pitch count. This is the fans delaying the game. Don't punish the player because the fans want to acknowledge a player on the field.
Well, I think that the umps have to account for every single second now. And I mean, there was even a story. I think it was Dan Bellino, the guy who threw out Scherzer. I think he was telling the story of how there was a pigeon on the field the other day, and a groundskeeper had to get a towel and go grab him off the field, right? And he had to like make a note in his log or whatever for why he delayed the game. So like literally every second now essentially is counted for. And so it does make it harder when a guy like Bellinger gets a standing O or even Romo in an exhibition game, because the exhibition game doesn't matter. They count it still as, you know, they have to ump it the same way. But there should be some kind of wiggle room. I mean, you can't just go from no clock to crazy, you know, extreme clock, you know, all in one season.
Without allowing for weird things like pigeons getting hit with baseballs. it's something, you know, things happen that will delay the game that is not the fault of a player. And those things, yes, they should be accounted for, but the ball or strike based on who was the cause of the delay should not be enforced in those situations. There does have to be some sort of wiggle room, some sort of mechanism, so that things outside of, you know, the spirit and, you know, the letter of the law needs to be, you know, address there. I mean, the spirit of the law is to increase the pace of play and to stop batters from playing with their batting gloves and doing three practice swings between every pitch.
The Manny Ramirez effect.
It's to stop the pitchers from holding the ball for a minute and a half between pitches. This is the spirit of the rule of what we're trying to do. But when something happens, when there's a beach ball on the field, when there's a pigeon lands on the field, or a cat runs across, you know, out from underneath somewhere and runs across the field, it delays the game. It can be accounted for without any sort of punishment to either team because of it.
I agree. If they're set to a strict time, then I don't know. Maybe not. But now, something that I did notice though, with the pitch clock violation rule, is that a pitch is counted when there's a pitch clock violation, even though there wasn't a pitch thrown. You know, I was watching, you know, for instance, on Saturday, yesterday, the bottom of the seventh, Almonte was pitching the Dodgers, and he had a pitch call malfunction and got a ball, right? Just as to start the inning, zero pitches, 0-0, right? Start the inning, and the pitch count went to one, right? Even though he didn't even throw a ball. So I wonder how that may or may not affect, you know, in an era when pitch count is everything, right? And you see 100 pitches, you're like, oh, no, okay. Yeah, we got to get him out of there.
That won't be that.
It's only going to be one or two a game, if that. But I'm talking, you know, baseball is a sport of stats, it's a sport of numbers. And when you start fudging the numbers, I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't sit right where it counts as a thrown ball, a thrown strike, or a thrown, you know, a ball in that case. A thrown pitch, basically.
Well, it
doesn't seem right.
No, but it's
like, I get why they do it, but it's just something that I just wasn't thinking about, that when I was watching the game, I just felt kind of like, you know, icky. I don't know how else to describe it.
Well, because a pitcher can then, you know, throw three balls for a walk. You know,
He can throw no balls for a walk. He can throw no balls and get a walk. Yeah. And then he could throw no balls.
They already could do that with just the manager putting up the four fingers. And
think about that. A guy could... Yeah, well, I know. Okay, so let's say a guy walks, right? He gets intentionally walked. Pick off, pick off, pick off. He gets balked. Does it again. Gets balked again. Wild pitch. A guy comes home. Okay, that's one pitch. Okay, but let's say another balk. How about that? The guy comes home. No pitches. Now it's 1-0. Not one pitch in the game. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that
could happen.
It's a little bit extreme, I think. A little bit silly. I don't necessarily see that happening. I see it's what you're happen. Trying to get at. It's not going to count towards the pitcher's pitch count for that game. If it, you know, if pitcher's doing well is at 95 pitches for the game, and the seventh inning holds the ball a little bit too long, gets called for a ball, it's not going to be his 96th pitch.
Well, officially.
How are you counting a pitch? I mean, it counts as a ball. Yes. Because that's the punishment.
It counts as a pitch, though.
For not.
I know.
But it doesn't count against a pitch against his arm. That's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of new.
If you're counting pitches,
for
the pitch count,
I'm just
that's
talking about
one
for,
thing.
I'm talking for posterity, and when you look back and you look at the pitch count and all this stuff, which we do now, and ever since they started counting pitches, which, you know, isn't that long. You can't go back 100 years and count pitches because nobody did. But it's not. You know, baseball is all about comparison and comparing eras, and you know, this is why we could do an entire show on baseball, and essentially we're not even talking about anything, but we're talking about baseball. Anyway, it was a question. I just had a question. You know.
That's a clown question, bro.
Yeah, okay. But it's fine. It's just little things that you didn't really think about. Like the groundskeepers, you know, trying to figure out a perfect diamond, which you can't anymore because the bases aren't exactly equidistant as they used to. I mean, I guess they are, but they're not perfectly symmetrical or square anymore because the diamond got a tiny bit smaller, you know, and so trying to cut the grass and cut the lines perfectly now. It's not perfect. To us, we can't really tell the difference. But the groundskeepers understand. And, you know, it's a big headache for them. Anyway, there's a lot of unintended consequences.
Well, there's always unintended consequences to every rule that is.
That being said, we've had a couple games that are under 2 hours this year. So, you know.
Which is fine. And a number of teams, as a consequence, have extended the time that you can go to the concessions and buy a beer.
Really?
Really.
Is that true?
Several teams. In Milwaukee, I know, is one. There's a handful of teams that have extended their alcohol sales into the eighth inning.
Wow.
Because they realize, oh, wait, these games are going by faster. That means there's less time for people to buy beer and drink it and buy another beer.
Now, I always thought that, you know, growing up in SoCal, that they stopped serving beers at 7 because everybody's driving home drunk. But that...
That's exactly the stated reason why they cut out. But that was when the games were going, you know, like 3 hours. So you have legitimately probably 2.5 hours back and forth.
But then by that logic, they should cut beer sales off in the fifth inning.
Of course. Of course.
So
it's concession sales, fan safety. Concession sales, fan safety. Concession sales.
That's how they get it. You know, I mean, hey, it makes sense. It makes, I guess. It doesn't make any sense, but I mean, you know.
What in this world makes sense anymore?
Dramatization may not have happened.
Well, I haven't seen that yet, but I will test it next time I go. I'm going to try to go get a beer in the eighth inning.
San Francisco is not on that list.
Oh. But apparently they, and now is this a myth? Because... obviously, all of us in the Bay have read, and maybe some people outside, that that they lowered the cost of beer by $5.
Well, in San Francisco, yes, that was the rumor, that they said they were lowering the price of beer from $14 to $9.
But is this real beer we're talking about, or are we talking about some light beer monstrosity?
I have not been to a game yet.
Well,
here
I have,
in this
and I'm
going to
spoil it for you. It turns out it is not real beer. It is the light beer monstrosities that nobody wants anyway. So yes,
what is it? Coors Light?
Whatever. There, I think it's Bud Light. Yeah, it's absurd.
It's not as good as what we have right here, that's for sure.
That's true. We're drinking some real beer right now.
Also, I have heard that not only is it not very good beer, it is also a smaller cup.
Right. That
it
that
is
makes sense.
Less volume, and we need still need to verify this physically, but it's probably more expensive per ounce than it was when it was $14 because of the size change as well.
That makes sense. And I do believe that you can now get Russian River beer at Oracle Park, which, yay for Russian River, but, you know, I'd like to see it go somewhere other than the Giants. But it makes sense. It's the only National League team close by, which brings us to this week's Ig Nobel Award of the Week. Now, there was some debate on who would get the Ig Nobel Award this week, but it's got to go to John Fisher.
Yeah, John Fisher. We had a number of different candidates, but yes, John Fisher, definitely.
I award you no points.
Terrible, terrible. Now, of course, we're burying the lead here. The A's are all but gone. They're gone. A's are gone. A's are going to Vegas, as everybody knows at this point. I mean, look, I've lived in SF for the better part of 2 decades. I'll always bleed blue. I can never root for the Giants, but I've adopted the A's. as my American League team because, well, frankly, I don't really care about the American League.
And they're kind of local, and you can go to the games.
And I can go to the games. And honestly,
root for the home team without feeling bad about being transgressing against the boys in blue.
I've had many, many great times at the Oakland Coliseum. I had many times I don't remember. I had a lot of great memories there. I saw Shohei Ohtani's very first hit as a major leaguer.
Yes.
I had some of the best seats I've ever had in any ballpark there because, well, back then you could before they raised the prices of all the seats last year when they have a garbage product on the field. But, look, I get it. This was probably a long time coming. I mean, for as long as I've been alive, I feel like they've been talking about moving out of Oakland. So it's not like it's a shock or it's anything new. But the way that it happened seemed a bit ignoble, and it seemed a little
just gross. All of a sudden, hey, we've bought some property in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we're probably going to build a stadium there.
You know, Manfred talking about how the new mayor, you know, it's partly her fault because she had to get caught. You know, it's like, come on, man. Like, you knew, and I know Manfred isn't a part of this. I don't want to get into any sort of conspiracies here. This is all John Fisher and the A's. You know, they want to move. They want to get the money. It makes sense. But the way they handled it, you know, as far as I was reading, they were supposed to have a press conference on Friday, the Friday after the Wednesday that the news broke. To address where they were in the Howard Terminal negotiations, right? And then before they could even get to that, boom, surprise. Hey, by the way, we're leaving. We're gone. We have 74 acres in Las Vegas. We're out of here. It's just sad for the city, who's already lost, you know, a couple teams, to say the least, as well as, I don't know. I don't live in the East Bay, but it's not fun to see. And I feel bad for the fans more than anything. And plus, this isn't, you know, the Rays have this similar problem here, right? The Rays are being essentially, their hands being forced. They have to either move or revitalize their park. But the A's have a good product. The Rays have a good product on the field. They have a great team.
Year to year, they look like they're trying to win. They compete and they have for the last 10 years or so have done really well and finished high in a competitive division.
And honestly, if the Rays got moved to, let's say, like, you know, Raleigh, Durham, Portland, whatever, they would still have a great fan base because the Rays are good and, you know, they develop great talent. Whereas the A's have historically shown that they do develop great talent, but then they just give them all away. So what's going to be the difference if they move to Vegas, then here, which will be now the smallest media market in all of baseball, you're going to be completely, maybe not completely, but pretty much determined on tourists wanting to go see baseball. It's not like football. Football, you got 8 home games a year. So, you know,
it's an event.
Fans travel for
it's
it.
A,
yeah.
It's a far
you fly
more
out on
of
Friday,
an event.
You watch the game Sunday. It's an event, and it's Vegas, so it's easy. I've been to a couple Raider games already out there. It's great. It's a great time. The half the stands, though, are the away fans. And so you don't really get the full effect of a home game there, which is the only bad thing. But it's because it's football. It makes sense. There's, you know, you only have a single-digit home game wherever you're from, so you don't mind traveling. Baseball, you got 81 home games. Who's going to be going to these games in Las Vegas?
And not only that, you know what else happens in Las Vegas in the summer?
Triple-digit heat?
Yes. I mean, you're sitting there. I mean,
and not probably, a humid. It's not good. It's a very arid.
Well,
dry
and people will say that it's the humidity, not the heat. And no, when it gets too
sometimes
hot, it's too hot.
Little,
it's like sitting in an oven versus sitting in a sauna. There is a difference.
No, but I think it's actually, you know, humidity and heat isn't fun, but I do think it makes for a better playing environment. You know,
perhaps.
You're like whenever I'm in Vegas.
Depends if you can't your hand too sticky.
Well, I just think about walking around Vegas, right? Like I'm always so parched. I'm always just dying of thirst. Now maybe it's because I'm subsisting on nothing but beer for days at a time, but I don't think so. I think it's just because it's extremely dry, and I'm not used to that. I've lived by the ocean my entire life, or at least, you know, within 50 miles of the ocean my entire life. I need a little humidity, and I can't only imagine what would happen to players or whatever. You know, I'm sure they'll have some sort of way to, I don't know, dome the stadium.
You say that, and it reminds me of something when I was living in Arizona, going to school. I came back for, I guess, probably a Christmas break. I was walking down the street here in San Francisco with my parents and some friends who were in town from the East Coast. And I had just, it was probably my first full day back. And I said, wow, I can really feel how humid it is right here. And the friends from Washington, D.C. said, you think this is humid? I said, well, you know, relative to where I just was, yes.
Yeah.
It's not very humid here. It is relatively, yeah, sure, it's humid here.
Right.
But it's not humid like it is on the East Coast or in the Midwest, where you get days that are 95 degrees and 95% humidity, though it's pretty miserable.
Oh, yeah.
But that's why they have air conditioning. And that's why they have air conditioning at the ballpark in Arizona.
Well, yeah, at Allegiant Field where the Raiders play, it's a dome. Obviously, it's indoors, but right. There's the whole sort of not like the end zones. Essentially, they have these giant walls that open up because you know the first few games of the season, sure. It's hot as hell. But you know, toward the December, January, yeah, it's great. Pleasant. They can open it up, yeah. And the entire roof is not transparent, but it is natural light gets through.
Translucent,
thank you. Yes. And so you get the natural light, but you also get climate controlled, and it's real grass. It's a modern marvel. I mean, that stadium is unbelievable.
Yeah, I have not yet made it to go check it out, but it's definitely on my list.
But can they do that for baseball? Because I don't think, as big as that stadium is and as high as that roof is, I don't know if they could do that for baseball.
I mean, it is possible. I don't know. I know of several attempts of trying to do that.
The Trop
is one, yes. The Houston Astrodome was another one.
Sure.
Where they tried to get natural light in through a full-time closed roof, and it just hasn't worked because it's really hard to see the baseball.
Right.
Now, I know that the Raiders Stadium, the glass is black.
Well, on the perimeter, on the entirety of the outside, on the sides,
but not on the roof.
No,
it's on clear
the,
glass.
No, it's not glass at all. It's I honestly don't know what it's a translucent white material of some kind that must be some sort of hardened plastic or some kind of polymer that you know I don't know about. Or maybe it's soft, but I don't know. I don't think so. All I know is that all the light is natural, for the day games at least, and it's beautiful. It's amazing. But yeah, from the outside, it just looks like the Death Star. It's formidable. It's awesome looking.
Well, I've seen pictures,
You can't really see the roof from the ground when you're outside, obviously. But if you fly over, you can see the whole top is kind of white, whitish, right? Okay. And that's what allows the light to come through. But anyway, it's baseball.
It is.
Right? It's not football. The population in Vegas is minuscule.
Well, it's compared to some cities.
Compared to any other city that baseball has played, for the most part, yeah. And or the potential expansion cities, right? Portland. I mean, I know that, I said Portland before, but...
Portland, Salt Lake City, Nashville.
Right. Charlotte, Montreal. You know, I know, like, they're dying. Even Vancouver. Great town. That would be amazing.
And give the Mariners a natural rival.
I guess my whole thing is it's a bad product here. It's a bad owner. I'm sure he'll sell the team in 5 years, right? After they move. He's just doing it to essentially sell the team and get the most that he can for it, which, okay, I understand.
He's already one of the richest people in the world.
Sure. Yeah. Obviously.
How much more money does he?
But the
really
A's
need?
We talked a little bit about this off air. They coming into today, Sunday, the 23rd, with a 4-17 record, putting them on pace
and
for 31 wins.
Not only that, a -100 run differential,
right,
which puts them on a pace for a -771 run differential for the season, which would, if it happened, would be the worst run differential in baseball history, going back to 1899.
Just a bit outside. It's when you think about who they had just 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 2020, right? Matt Olson, Matt Chapman, Marcus Semien, Sean Murphy, Mark Canha, Chris Bassett, Jesus Luzardo, Sean Manaea, Frankie Montas, Liam Hendricks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
The A's history in the last 30 years is filled with incredible names that have just been there long enough to make a name for themselves and then get traded away.
Or leave for
free agency and greener pastures and bigger paychecks elsewhere.
So why would anybody in Nevada think that, okay, aside from the first couple of months when it's new and it's exciting and, hey, we have a home team, they're not the Golden Knights, right, who made it to the Stanley Cup. They're not the Raiders, who are the Raiders. You know, they're just they are the A's, the worst team in baseball, with arguably the worst owner in baseball. What's going to get people to come to that stadium? I don't understand it. I don't get it. I mean, I understand it. Obviously, financially, it makes sense. I don't know.
Something for the locals to do that isn't a casino?
I think the casino wins every time.
I mean, that's what really does bring in the tourists, if it isn't a Sunday for the thing. Also happening in Vegas this year, just total aside in transit, there's going to be a Formula One race.
Right.
In Las Vegas this year.
Oh, yeah.
That should probably be pretty insane.
Well, it's going to be every year now. As far as I know,
it's going to be an annual event.
Yeah, I know they have a contract
for a certain amount. Like Monaco or something.
Yeah, they're trying to make it permanent. Which, okay, fine. I don't know. I will say, if it's a day game, kind of makes sense. There's not a lot to do during the day in Vegas. I guess that's not true. You can do anything during the day that you can do at night. But for the most part, you don't really want to go outside. You know, you're probably sleeping away your hangover. So maybe just chilling at a ballpark sounds great. To me, it sounds fine.
Wow. You're a baseball fan.
Right. I'm sure there are baseball fans in Nevada, but I don't know if there's 40,000 fans every day that want to show up to a new stadium. Maybe they'll make it tiny. Maybe they'll make it, 32,000, or even like here, like Oracle Park with 34,000, 36,000.
42.
42? Standing room, maybe.
Well, standing room is like, maybe. It's a little bit more. But
well, anyway. Well, so... John Fisher.
How do you sleep at night?
Now, you had
a very comfortable bedding, I am sure.
In a pillowcase full of hundreds.
And just for those of you who do want to know, the teams that have extended the beer sales this year are the Brewers, the Diamondbacks, the Rangers, and the Twins.
Ooh.
Those are the ones confirmed so far. Who knows if other teams will follow suit? Liquor in the front, poker in the rear.
Now, you had a new segment, I believe, that you wanted to start here. It's been a while, okay.
It has. Yes, I do have a new little section. I want to do a little player comparison. I want to compare two different players, possibly from two different eras, possibly... Hall of Fame players versus non-Hall of Fame players. Possibly current players against non-current players. but two players and just see how different or similar they are. So I know who these two players are.
Okay. I hope so.
But you, Adam, do not. And see, one, if you can tell who these players are by just their numbers.
Not their jersey numbers.
Okay. All right. Their statistical numbers.
I'm not very good
numbers.
At that. Okay, good, good.
Which one is a Hall of Famer? In this instance, which one is a Hall of Famer and which one is not a Hall of Famer?
Making me prove my mettle here. Okay.
These are players from two different eras, and they do play the same position.
Two different eras. Same position. Okay. One's a Hall of Famer, one is not.
Correct.
All right, let's go.
All right. Player number one... played for 21 years. Has a win-loss record. He's a pitcher. Win-loss record of 165 and 87.
Jeez, that's it? In 21 years? Okay.
And a lifetime ERA of 276.
Huh.
And 397 games. 314 of which were starts. He has 40 shutouts and 9 saves, 2,324.1 innings pitched.
Only 9 saves, okay.
Player,
I thought it was somebody. No, I'm not so sure.
Player number two played for... 15 years, has a win-loss record of 288, an ERA
200
of,
even?
Yes.
And 88 losses.
As the time of this research was done.
Okay, all right. I think I know the second one. All right.
An ERA of 248,
yeah.
And 405 games, 402 have been starts.
So the first one's a Hall of Famer? Wow, he must have died or something. No, 21 years. No, I guess not.
Well, is it 21 years? My last
21 seasons, you said.
No, sorry, this is not. My math was wrong. Sorry, it's 11 years.
I was gonna say that's only
11 years.
Yeah, okay. That makes more sense. 167 wins, is that what you said?
165.
80. Okay. So the second one's obviously Clayton Kershaw.
Yes.
Okay. Second, who is a future one. Hall of Famer, but not yet a Hall of Famer.
Well, not yet a Hall of Famer, which is why he's not a Hall of Famer.
The first one is a Hall of Famer.
I can give you some.
So you already messed up the stats on me. So now I have to like rewire my brain here. Okay.
So you want to hear them again?
11 seasons.
11 seasons.
Okay.
165 and 87.
Okay.
137 complete games, 40 shutouts, 9 saves.
It's a good record for 11 seasons.
It's a very good record.
career, how many strikeouts?
Strikeouts, career strikeouts, 2396.
Wow.
As compared to 2833 from Clayton Kershaw.
Okay.
Perhaps a postseason record might help. This player postseason record 4 wins, 3 losses. 8 games.
All right, I'm thinking I want to say he pitched longer than this. What was the ERA?
Yeah. 276.
All right. Pedro Martinez.
No.
Damn.
No, not Pedro.
Yeah, he played longer than that. Played 11 seasons.
That 3-4 in the postseason with 2 shutouts, 57 innings pitched.
11 seasons. Oh, Sandy Koufax.
Yeah,
there we go. Jesus. Oh, my God. Sorry,
like,
Sandy.
Pulling teeth.
Sorry, Sandy.
I pulled these.
You threw me off with the 21 seed. I was like, geez, who the hell? That's such a low win-loss record. Only 8 saves.
My math didn't fit right, like from that. From 1955 to 1966 is 11 seasons.
Oh yeah.
From age 19 to age 30.
Just an unbelievable Jaws score on that too. You know, the Jaffe War score, which takes the peaks of players' careers. You know, because like Sandy Koufax is a perfect example of a guy who had a very short career. But man, did he shine like a supernova. It's just unbelievable. And so a lot of players have that. A lot of players have maybe a long career, but they had like 8 or 9 years where they were truly amazing. And so it's fun to look at the Jaws comparisons for players. Batters as well. But
It really is. And just, you know, just those of in our audience who don't know, Sandy Koufax was just, you know, in addition to being a Hall of Famer, he did win one MVP. He won the pitching Triple Crown 3 times. He's a 4-time World Series champion, 5-time ERA title winner, 3-time Cy Young winner, 7-time All-Star with 2 World Series MVPs and 2 Major League Player of the Year awards.
And his no-hitter record was a record until, I mean, obviously, Nolan Ryan broke it.
Right.
And Nolan Ryan pretty much spent his whole career just trying to beat Sandy Koufax, which he did because Sandy Koufax, of course, had the single-season strikeout record for years. And then that was, you know, Nolan Ryan's sole focus, essentially, for his seemingly his entire career was just to beat Sandy Koufax. Right. And when you think about one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball, it was Sandy Koufax at the time, but then, you know, in the more modern era.
Absolutely. Obviously. And his short career, you know, he famously blew out his elbow. Now imagine had Tommy John surgery existed in 1966, how much longer with a year off would have Koufax been able to go, and how much greater would his numbers have actually been?
Yeah,
especially in an era where he was facing hitters like Willie Mays, regularly, because there was really only, you know, just a few teams. Certainly not as many as there is today. So he's seeing the same players over and over again,
which means they're seeing him over and over. Yeah,
dominating.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I picked these 2 players because they really did overall have some fairly similar numbers. Certainly number of losses.
Oh yeah. Clayton Kershaw's career ERA is just silly though. I mean, it's just unbelievable. A sub 2.5 in this day and age is just crazy.
It really is. And you know, I knew you were going to get that as soon as you started talking about his career record.
Well,
these numbers, I wanted to find players that were comparable in terms of pure numbers that they put up and to show what a future Hall of Fame player looks like as compared to an actual Hall of Fame pitcher.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, they're both lefties. They both wore Dodger uniforms their whole career, you know, so the comparisons are there.
It's a really easy comparison to make, which I thought would be a good one to sort of start out with. And as I research more players and start looking, I'll be come up hopefully with some more difficult ones.
Mordecai Three Fingers Brown or something like that.
Notable players, but you know, different sorts of comparison. And I'm willing to take suggestions
too.
If you email the show, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll have some fun.
I like that. Very good. Nice. Any general musings before we get on to the emails here?
And general musings
or mewlings?
Well, let's see. I, you know, there's still more rules being tested.
Oh, okay. So that actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because this we did get an email from a John Fortuna who asks, what are some possible changes in the future that you guys would like to see, and or future ways you think baseball may make, or MLB may make baseball more fan-friendly, and or, you know, whatever. But I know that there have been some new rules already being tested out, right?
Right. The Atlantic League, the testing bed for potential rule changes for Major League Baseball.
Guinea pig farm, yeah.
They're doing three new rules of note. A designated pinch runner.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing that. Okay.
Where the starting lineup has a designated pinch runner, the player may be substituted at any point into the game as a base runner. The player who's substituted for as well as the pinch runner may return to the game without penalty.
That's crazy. So the pinch runner is literally just that. It doesn't have to bat ever.
Right.
And the batter he replaces can come back in his next lineup spot.
Presumably, as long as he can get to first base safely, he will not have to go farther than that.
That's crazy. That's a little extreme.
Well, you know, I think trying to extend players' careers with bad knees.
The Billy Hamilton. Oh, I thought you were thinking of speedsters who can't hit. But well, yeah, but yeah, I guess it works
that,
both ways.
There's that too, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a big slugger, you know, like Albert Pujols. We can still, you know, get a single, get a double, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I don't know. Okay, all right. What's the next one?
I don't know.
All right.
There is a there's a single disengagement per at bat.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
Yeah, unlike the new
rule,
disengage from the pitching rubber twice during that bat, and they only will test permanent only a single disengagement per at bat.
I don't like that, because we've already discussed this. There are glitches. There are the guy presses the wrong button. You know, like, stuff happens. Like, you should be able to get. And if anything, I think baseball is hamstrung by its own sort of traditional three strikes, you're out ideal. And that's probably why they gave them only two attempts, right? And then the third one, you're out. It's like, well, I think three and then the fourth one makes more sense, but it's not kosher for the traditional baseball motif. So I think they chose three strikes, you're out on that, metaphorically.
Fourth one, you missed and the guy walks to the next base. I don't know.
No, I mean, pick off at times.
Yeah.
And or just disengagements. Yeah. Well, anyway. Well, yeah. But yeah, thank you. Yeah, you're right. Took me a second.
I'm glad that came around and got you. So. Ooh,
your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe
thank
to your
you.
Newsletter.
Okay. Okay. All right. No, pass. What's the next one?
All right. The third one be a use of the double hook DH rule, which allows the use of the designated hitter throughout the game, provided that the club's starting pitcher has completed at least 5 innings.
Oh, that's right. I remember this. Yeah.
If the starter fails to make it through the fifth, the club then loses the DH.
Yeah. Now, I like this. I like this one. This one is weird, but, you know.
It is a little bit weird. I think.
Interesting.
I think it could work with some tweaking.
Now, you know my opinion on the designated hitter. It's an abomination.
I 100% agree with
it. It's absurd.
And I think I think that it would be unfair should the pitcher not be able to complete the 5 innings because of an injury.
Okay, well, maybe there's a caveat if he gets carted off the field for some reason. If it's anything other than an injury, though, you know.
Well, but then how do you prove it in the moment? If a guy, there's something wrong.
Oh, he just pretends.
And he gets shelled because he's a gamer and wants to go out and compete, but gets absolutely shelled because there's something wrong with his arm and the ball's not moving right. They take him out and they later find out that he's injured. But you know, just looked like he was just having a bad.
Nope, sorry, thing, you're playing by the old rules. You're playing by the big boy rules today. No, you're out of here. No DH for you. You know, I like that. That's you know, I kind of.
Not so for you.
I don't hate it. Look, it's kind of like a meeting me halfway, right? People that want the DH, people that don't want the DH. Maybe that's a in between. It does. I see what you're saying, though. It makes it a little weird because then two teams are playing different games, and it's a little. But I think generally the spirit of the rule is to disincentivize the opener and the idea of a one inning guy or something.
I would agree there. I think for whatever reason people in the league don't like.
Now I'm a bit conflicted opener, here. Yeah, but. I'm a little conflicted because the opener to me, and I've been saying this forever, you know, I like strategy. I like when the game evolves. I like, as long as the rules don't change, I like when teams try new things, you know? It's like in football before they change the onside kick rule. Why aren't they always going for the onside kick? They should always go for the onside kick. Now there's a new rule. He has to, you know, the guy has to touch it, you know, whatever. It has to go 10 yards, whatever. But before, it just used to be the guy touches it, it's a fair ball. If it goes 10 yards, it's a fair ball. But now it's silly. Anyway.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It only takes one team to try something new to change the sport, right? Like the shift, right?
Yeah, because
they realize it works.
So it's going to be a copycat league. Something works. They say, hey, so that works. Let's do it.
But. I don't hate the opener. I don't hate the idea. I don't like it necessarily, but I get it. And sometimes you have to have a bullpen day. It's just not like it used to be. You can't just throw a guy out there and say, hey, go give me 7 innings today, you know, when it's like when all your best starters are gone. I get it. So in that sense, it would kind of make that a little wonky. I guess it's all or nothing, I guess. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't really work.
I mean,
it's interesting, though.
There's different ways to perhaps implement this, but it might require a little bit more thought that might make it a little bit more even.
You know, it's funny, when I was reading this email, I was thinking, because it's sort of like, you know, what could MLB do to make the game more fan friendly? And I was thinking about, I don't know why, I was watching a game, but I just thought that there was a close play at the outfield wall, you know, and there was actually a game a couple weeks ago against the Dodgers when the Giants' new center fielder, outfielder, Bryson something, just
Bryce Johnson, yeah.
Bryce Johnson smashed into the wall, made the catch. It was an amazing catch. But he, you know, was obviously done
concussed.
For the, he got messed up. But I was thinking, I was like, you know, maybe like what if they just put extremely padded walls out there? Like the walls aren't just padded, but like fun to smash into, like cushiony, like, you know, like foam
memory
rubbers.
Foam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it would
leave the impression like a cartoon.
I think it would generate more action. It would encourage guys to really
more so than
lay
the
out
ivy
for the play.
Covering the
bricks
and Wrigley.
Exactly. Which is cool. Like, I get that. But, you know, maybe like on some new parks or something. You know, that's the best, like, one of the best things about baseball is that every park
John
is different.
John Fisher, are you listening? Your
new
stadium.
Yeah, come on. Happy fun ball. Let's go. You know, I remember we've talked about this.
Yeah, it would
before.
Improve player safety overall. Safety. If they not have to worry about the thing. You still have the warning track out there, so you're getting close to the wall. So you can think, but if you hit the wall to make the catch, it won't necessarily hurt.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. I think it'd be, I mean, obviously for the safety standard, it's a no-brainer, but I think it would actually make for more entertaining outfield plays. I don't know.
It definitely could.
That was my little
also in terms of fan enjoyment, one of the things that I noticed about Yankee Stadium was that the net put up to protect the fans among the things.
Foul ball net, yeah.
The foul ball net was lower than the backstop portion of the fence. So that net where I was sitting in the lower deck on the third base side, we were about halfway up, 15, 20-ish rows up from the field, the top of that side net protecting the fans from foul balls was at my eye level. I was not looking through the net at the game.
So a ball, you had much easier chance of catching a foul ball.
Much easier. That was more on a line. There was no foul balls that came anywhere near our section, unfortunately. But
and that might also make fan interaction a little more accessible as well. Like back in the day, these just toss you a ball you know, in between innings.
Much easier. Much
now they have
easier
to launch
for
it over.
So that was, I appreciated that. I liked that.
All right, you heard it here first. Sam, the new Yankee fan over here. Well,
Yankee
I'm impressed.
Stadium fan.
Yeah. that brings us to last week's trivia question.
Last week's? Last episode's.
Last week's. Last week's trivia question. Who has been selected to the most All-Star games? Fairly cut and dry. And I think it was a little too easy because virtually everybody guessed it right, except for at Real Steve Big says, gotta be Willie Mays. Mm. Oh no, Steve. Oh no. It's not Willie Mays. Sadly, everybody else got it right. So I think it was a little too easy. Gary in Fullerton says, come on, guys. Obviously, Hammerin' Hank. Ding, ding, ding. The great Hank Aaron was selected as an All-Star in a record 21 of his 23 MLB seasons.
Pretty impressive.
Willie Mays and Stan Musial right behind him, though, with 20 seasons apiece.
So, not a bad guess to guess.
Not a bad guess.
Willie Mays. But
that's probably what I would have guessed, honestly, if I didn't create the question. Okay. But remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. What do you got for me this week?
Well, I
have it.
You actually do have the trivia question again this week.
Now, this is inspired by a mutual friend of ours, Julio, a.k.a. J-Lo, who sent me he's a diehard Giants fan, and obviously I'm a Dodger fan, and so he sends me clippings and quips, and not clippings, I'm when I'm 80 years old, not clippings, like, you know, media. He sends me things every once in a while.
Yeah, sure.
And he sent me a video, some social media posts of Raul Mondesi getting the last home run in Candlestick Park, which he did. The last official home run at Candlestick Park was a Dodger, of course.
It was a Giants-Dodgers game. What a better combination to close out the ballpark.
But the whole point of this post was that he also, Mondesi, got the very first home run at Pac Bell Park, A.K.A.
In a regular season
AKA
game.
A.K.A. SBC Park, yeah, A.K.A. No, AT&T Park, A.K.A. What is it now?
And something tells me that that is not correct.
Yeah, it didn't seem
right. I remember
right.
A different Dodger hitting three home runs.
Well, that is true.
In that opening game at then what was Pac Bell Park.
Yeah, it didn't seem right to me. Although I liked it. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, of course, a Dodger, you know. But yes, no, you are correct. It was not Raul Mondesi, unfortunately. And I was thinking maybe it was a exhibition game, because I know I'm pretty sure you said Posada hit one or something.
Posada was the first player to hit the ball into the bay, or as Max Muncy would say, the ocean, at Pac Bell Park. But that was an exhibition game against the Yankees.
But
a soft opening.
I couldn't find that. I found that they played an exhibition series against the Brewers, which immediately ruled out Mondesi. But anyway, it's unless I'm wrong, unless somebody please email us, let me know if Julio was right or I was right, or the post, I should say, that Julio sent me was right. I don't think it is. He definitely got the last in Candlestick, but that's not the question. So the very first one, it was Kevin Elster, right, who actually hit three that day, topping Barry Bonds, tripling up Barry Bonds, who actually, Barry Bonds did hit a home run that day too, but later in the game. It was not the first. But that's not the question this week. This week's trivia question: what Giant hit the first splash hit in McCovey Cove, who is not named Barry Bonds?
Be very disappointed with our loyal listeners who are Giants fans who don't get this question correct.
And to spice it up a little bit, Barry Bonds did not hit the first 10. He hit the first 9 here. Number 10, who was number 10? Obviously a Giant, but yes. It's kind of a clunky question, but let us know. First, I don't think you even know this one, do you?
I didn't know it off the top of my head earlier.
I'll give you a clue. It is not Pablo Sandoval.
Okay. Right.
Email us, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. That was fun, man. I'm glad we're back. You know, we never left. We've just been doing it in your hearts and minds, and now we're back on the airwaves here. Yes. So,
and looking forward to a consistent season this year. Bringing to you all of the musings, news, and otherwise rants for the 2023 season.
Come back here. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.